Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay is the Top Chef Judges Roundtable podcast here on Reality TV. We're Hat Puffs. Hello, everybody. Or should I say ni hao, considering that now we are international on Top Chef Kentucky. Mike Bloom here to talk about our first episode in Macau for season 16 of Top Chef as 5 go down to 4. I am, of course, not alone, as you heard from these chortles mocking the way I try to immerse myself in the culture, Antonio Mazzaro.
Hey, nothing says Chinese like Mike Bloom saying ni hao. So I'm ready. It certainly prepared me for Macau. I'm happy to be here, though. And I'm sorry for laughing at you, Mike.
Oh, no, please. It's brought on. I invite it. Haley, how are you doing?
I'm good, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. Oh, this feels so nice.
I didn't want anyone to say I was a Macoward for not saying, oh, how are you doing too?
Nailed it.
Thank you.
There we go. I think we can end it right there. Thank you all so much, folks. We have an episode to get into. Holy Macau, as the chefs approach the finale. It's always weird how they call this the finals, even though they still have 3 more rounds of cooking to get through. I think that this episode really, you know, this is the first time we've really gone so international in terms of culture shock, I think, since we went to Singapore back in season 7. And I think that this really showed first and foremost that in those situations, when in Rome. And it seems like in this episode, we found out in both challenges that the way these chefs are going to do well in this new setting is to make sure they're adjusting to the culture and that they're incorporating their own styles into it, rather than saying, OK, let me take something that I know and put it in front of a Chinese setting and see if it necessarily meshes. Antonio, how do you think these chefs did overall when it came to enmeshing themselves within the Chinese culture?
Hard to say, Mike, because I think the show was edited a little bit train wrecky. I think the show sometimes has to deal with showing 2 sets of judges tasting multiple dishes. And that can be interesting when the judges give different feedback. But it makes it so that it's not 100% clear exactly how successful some of the dishes were. For example, we see Tom saying to Sarah as he's eating the dish, or after he ate Sarah's dish, you see Tom and Graham saying how good it was. And then later they're ripping it apart at judges' table. But it seemed like the general consensus was they were overall pretty tasty food. So I think I saw some stuff that seemed inspired. Kelsey particularly seemed to do really well with the quickfire and the elimination challenge in terms of taking the local ingredients and also what she does and making them her own. Other contest chef testants maybe struggled a little bit more. But on the whole, I thought so far a good start in Macau.
Haley, what about you?
Yeah, I really liked how this episode went. I mean, maybe I just didn't pick up the train wreckiness of it. I quite enjoyed it. I loved them going through the market. I liked them, you know, using ingredients and having to use certain ingredients and really trying to take in the culture in which they are currently in.
So speaking of which, we start here with as the chefs get settled into their beautiful hotel suite that they'll be operating out of, assumingly until the finale. Knock, knock, knock. Here comes Graham Elliott. And I gotta say, admittedly, a bit of a low bar to clear, but I think this might be my favorite Graham appearance during his 2-season tenure on Top Chef thus far.
What did you like about it? What jumped out Graham-wise for you? Because he knew the area and was sort of like a fun tour guide?
Yeah, I mean, this is an opportunity for him to be independent from the judges, for him to show like, hey, this is just me talking with the chefs. And I think that he served as a nice envoy of the community, albeit through a familiar face. You know, he's someone who obviously has experience. He has a restaurant in Macau. So and he had some fun little, you know, he had some fun with them as they were walking through, scaring them by watching all the shellfish still live spouting water out at them. So again, there's not really much to compare it by, but I enjoyed Graham here. He showed more personality to me than he has in the past couple seasons.
Haley, did you happen to pick up the colloquialism that Graham used to describe those squirting shellfish?
Please remind me.
Well,
you know what? No, don't remind me. No, I'm just kidding. Remind me.
I thought that he said it. That's a term that I've heard before for a soft shell clam. He said piss clams.
Yeah, no, he didn't hear that. Glad I didn't. I hadn't heard it now.
It was right after the one had spurted out. So I don't know.
I've
heard the term before, but never realized that it was not something that wasn't completely impolite. Graham was just throwing out piss clams at the market there, Mike.
Well, piss clams are the number one seafood.
Apparently, who knew?
That was awful, Mike.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to be a coward either for putting that out there.
The number one seafood.
So as the chefs go through their little shopping trip, and they'll have plenty of opportunities to revisit the market later, they get up to the rooftop when, surprise, quick fire. So basically they have 45 minutes and about $25 to go back into the market and make a dish reminiscent of their experience there. They do have some stuff that they can sit through in terms of the shopping that they already went through this morning. They have some gumfish, cuttlefish, eel, sea snail, giant scallop, and razor clams. Haley, in terms of the ingredients that they had, did any stick out to you for one reason or another as to something that you would personally want to pick as a chef?
First of all, we missed Kelsey being like, oh, I'm just taking everything in the market because either we're going to use it in 15 minutes or, you know, later today. And then, like, you get to the roof and it's like, welcome to your quick fire. And she's like, mm-hmm. amazing. Please don't sign me up for gumfish. I'm sure it's the way Kelsey made it is delicious, but it's called gumfish.
Would you rather a cuttlefish? Because it sounds like cuttlefish. Like, is that something?
Yeah. I think so. Or like even razor clam sounds cool, but gumfish just sounds not what I want.
Well, I think the cuttlefish, because it is related to the squid, it does have those tentacular elements that allows it to really suck onto you. And so I think it really does speak up to its name. I don't know. I guess maybe the gumfish has bad branding, Antonio, because Haley seems to not want to go for it based on name alone.
I mean, let's face it. It doesn't sound great to me either. And Kelsey talked about the teeth on the thing. So maybe the gums in question are mouth based rather than chewing gum, which is also a bad look. Very fresh seafood here, clearly, in Macau. And we have variations of it. Sarah gets some very difficult to work with scallops. Adrian gets the razor clams. Eric gets the snails. No piss clams, I guess, in play here. By the way, I'm looking at my notes app, and I guess it typed piss class instead of piss clams, which is a very different thing, I suppose.
Don't sign me up for that either, please.
Yeah, no, the signups are full for that one, Haley. Yeah, it is. I do like what these chefs did to prepare. We heard Adrian say, you know, I've got no wins. I'm coming here to win. And Michelle very quietly say, I'm here to kick some ass. Like, she's so happy to do it. And Sarah apparently learned curse words and polite phrases, which is, I think, very on brand.
I love exact opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of etiquette when it comes to approaching interactions in this country.
Well, yeah, for me, that felt very on brand for Kentucky. Like, I'm going to learn a few curse words and also how to be polite. So I love that. The cuttlefish, though, you mentioned, Haley, that Kelsey was like taking everything in because she knew there would probably be a quick fire coming up. Michelle was literally taking everything in. She was tasting everything she could get her hands on.
Yeah, I always wonder that in terms of etiquette, because we see this as well when the chefs are shopping around, that obviously there's a language barrier. And even though I will give Sarah a huge amount of credit for doing her research and, you know, at least learning some Cantonese on the way out there to help navigate very shakily these elements in the marketplace. I mean, people are essentially reaching into these open stalls and trying things as to whether or not they should, you know, utilize them in their dishes. Is that rude? I can't tell, honestly.
Good question.
That's a good question.
So.
Haley, Canadians are experts on politeness. You say you don't think so?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. It's... I bet they paid for it after, like, they were offered it. Like, I doubt that they were just taking it.
My experience at markets like that is it is a very much a live kind of place. Like, you do want to try things. They are offering you things. People will offer you their wares just to say, hey, try a piece of this fresh fruit or try whatever, because they want you to buy it. So they're throwing, you know, they're always going to let you sample stuff. I mean, it's a sampling that's happening at Whole Foods, right? When you see at Whole Foods, they're like, hey, can I try a piece of that salmon or can I try a piece of that? But you're not walking to like the raw ingredients area and just downing some cashews or some trail mix or whatever. So there are lines to be drawn. And I'm sure it's even more confusing when you're in another country, knowing where those lines are drawn. But I think following local, nobody got in trouble for this. So yeah. I think they were all right. Like, we didn't see anybody get jailed or railroaded. Nobody got caned or whatever else might have been local forms of punishment. So I think we're fine.
Yeah, good thing there was no spray paint elimination challenge or that. They would have really, actually, no, they went, that would have happened only in Singapore when they went in season 7. But Yeah, so they start walking around the market here. I will say I'm a bit surprised. I think Kelsey does pretty well with the gumfish, but I'm a bit surprised that eel gets left on the tail. First of all, because they kind of wasted that poor eel that ends up getting killed right in front of them. Maybe there's a reason why they kept that, you know, by the wayside. But I feel like in terms of accessibility, I feel like eel is more accessible than gumfish. I know that Kelsey sort of had, I don't know, a comparison to make with the gumfish the way she prepared them. She wanted to treat them like crab claws. But, I mean, eel seems like it's a pretty mild fishiness to it. And so I feel like it's something you could utilize more and bring a lot more flavor out of than something like gumfish, which doesn't have a fantastic appearance to begin with.
Yeah, you wonder, are they maybe more willing to take chances on the quick fire and stretch their legs a little bit, knowing that it won't send them home? And maybe they have to be a little bit more on brand or reserved with the elimination challenge. And so maybe people were taking more exotic ingredients here instead of something like eel, which I think is remarked upon in the episode. Eels are everywhere. They're ubiquitous. You can have them anywhere. So maybe that was part of it as well.
All right, let's get into some of these dishes that the chefs produce. Actually, first, talk to me all about your thoughts on Kelsey's new friend in the marketplace, Haley.
Amazing. Like, of course, Kelsey would be the one to make friends with somebody in the market. And because, like, she goes back later and the lady's like, you forgot this. And she's like, oh, my God, we're besties. Although, yeah, someone like Kelsey in this situation would not be, or it would be hard not to remember her.
That's very true. As she said, she's the blondest person in Macau. So it's something you definitely have in your retinas. And not only is she her new friend, she also, for a hot second, might have been her drug mule, considering the suspect bag of white stuff she gets handed.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. It could be cornstarch, could be AP flour. It could be something very different. So
yeah, people would love her dish, though.
Yeah, they're very tasty. I can't eat enough of it.
It's very tasty. What's going on here? I love this. It's great. Can I get another one?
Yeah, they'd be itching for more, like, oh man, I mean, this elimination challenge is great. Can we have some more of Kelsey's quick fire? I don't know why, but I've just been craving that for the past couple days.
Yeah, and I've been awake for three of those days, just waiting
for
it.
Must be jet lag. Must be jet lag.
The street name is quick fire. Pretty good. It would be work. That would work. That's a good street name for a drug. Somebody get that.
I love it. Before Magical Elf sort of gets their hands around it, legally speaking, and gets rid of it. I think it's a good street name that you can put out there.
Yep.
Let's get into these dishes. Haley, what sticks out for you from these five dishes, for good or for bad?
I'd say Michelle's cuttlefish noodles is pretty interesting. I like that she like cut it in, I believe she cut it in like strips, right? Like, I feel like when people have made seafood noodles on the show before, they like pulverize it and then like do some like sort of jelly thing with it. And that's always very unsettling to me. This looked great. And it must have been great because she won. Spoiler alert. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, it does really seem like, you know, Michelle has talked about this a bit during the latter few challenges about her Italian cooking skills. And it really seems to have come to the forefront, both in the one of the challenges in the Last Chance Kitchen. That's how she beat David in making that pasta in 30 minutes. Here she essentially treats the cuttlefish like pasta. And even though it does curl up into more of a fusilli, she ends up winning because of this. Antonio, as someone well versed in Italian cooking, do you find that there's some commonality there, as Michelle was pointing out, between, you know, the way that they handle those types of ingredients?
I think that she was smart in terms of her approach in that regard, because I do think that she took what she knew how to do. And it wasn't just that she made it straight up Italian. She definitely remarks on that in the elimination challenge, especially with the pork and with some of the stuff she was doing there. In this particular instance, I think she said she was inspired by some of the stuff that she knows, that she's seen before, that she knows that she can do. But I think she does put her own stamp on it. I mean, look, Graham told us she threw down on some sick flavors, guys. Like, Graham straight up told us that she threw down on some sick flavors.
He's a backward facing pair of sunglasses away from straight Guy Fieri.
How are you doing, fellow children? Like, or whatever. Like, yeah.
Yes, but Kelsey, this gumfish was on fleek. No,
poor Graham. Poor Graham. Even on his best episode, he can't escape the hate. But no, I think she was smart in her concept, and I think she knew how to do what she was doing. It didn't exactly turn out how she intended, but it wasn't affect. It didn't affect the overall tenor of the dish. Like what she ended up doing. No, the noodles did curl up. It sounded like maybe she had sous vide them before, she said, or had them done in a bag versus how she did them this time. So they curled up a little bit. And like you said, fusilli, like certainly I think the overall like appearance of them were different, but the texture was on point. I think she was smart. She made a good dish. I thought that that was the one that stood out. Obviously, we didn't eat any of them, but that was the one that jumped off the page for me.
Yeah, the other one that really stood out to me in a good way was Kelsey's, just because she, I mean, this, there's a reason why her and Michelle do well in both challenges here, is that they really show first and foremost, I'm going to take these Chinese ingredients and become inspired by them in a way that is able to straddle the territory between my own style and living in the culture that we're currently immersed in. And I think that at this point, where we're standing things at the end of the episode, Eric and Sarah need to do a little bit of catch up. Because I think where both of them struggle in this episode is still rooting themselves back in their own styles of cuisine and trying to present it in a Chinese context rather than really trying to create this fusion. And I feel like Kelsey, again, she treats this gumfish like the like crab claws. She prepares them in a very similar way, but she throws it in a sweet and sour sauce. So it really invokes these Chinese elements with a similar way of cooking that she's used to doing in Alabama. And I think, you know, I was hoping last week that Kelsey would turn it on. In Macau, we're going to see her win the elimination challenge. It really feels like Haley, she started to really get into it in Macau.
And I'm so happy about it. Like, oh, this is the perfect time for her to get her stride in the go or whatever. You know what I mean? Whatever.
The old get her stride in the go.
Get your stride in the go and grab some quick fire.
Help me, I'm ill.
Haley, I have a question for you. Do you think Mike is right that Eric and Sarah will do good if they make ketchup? Because that doesn't seem Chinese to me.
I have a fun story that I'm going to tell you. Last week, Mike asked you, Antonio, if you had ever been to China, and you said no. Mike, you didn't ask me. I have been to China, but I didn't want to brag about it.
Until now.
We went to this one restaurant, and there was this dipping sauce that was so good, and we kept like dipping whatever it was into it and being like, oh, what is this? And then you taste it and you're like, you know, you're like, oh, it tastes like sweet, kind of vinegary, blah, blah, blah. And then I tasted it without something. I was like, guys, it's homemade ketchup. Like, that's all this is.
So maybe Eric and Sarah can do well, Mike, if they make some ketchup, like you said.
Yeah. So let me play ketchup on the ketchup talk then, Haley. When you went to China, were there any familiarities with your experience from what the chef sort of underwent in this episode and assumingly will undergo in the next couple?
I'm trying to think. I didn't do a whole lot of cooking. I would say there was quite a bit of fried stuff. So I think Kelsey going in the fried direction was pretty interesting and pretty similar to what my experience was. So that was fun. I mean, I'm really excited for these next couple episodes because it's such a change from what we were doing. And back to Kelsey. I love her. I've been standing her since episode one. I'm so glad that this is like finally paying off for me after I've had Antonio yelling at me for podcast upon podcast about how trash Kelsey is.
Oh God, you're trolling me so hard and I will not accept it. Will not accept it. I will say you're, as I said last week, your draft team crushing it. You definitely.
The final four is three people on my draft team. Yeah.
You have been the number one Kelsey stan from the start. It's funny that you would say she is so nice to the lady at the market. I guess you forgot when she was so mean to the staff at Restaurant Wars. But I will say.
You've never been under stress before. You've never had to, you know, work with Pablo. Just kidding.
Pablo, yeah.
Yes, we all know the spawn of Satan himself, Pablo.
Yes, the meanest man on the whole season. I think that you guys are right. Like Kelsey's picking it up at the right time, and she and Michelle clearly were able to do what they do, but in a way that really paid tribute to where they were and their experience. And when it comes to Sarah and Eric playing catch up, it's interesting because Eric has stood out by cooking his food throughout the season, which was very different than maybe what other chefs were doing for sure, but maybe not entirely different than Kentucky food. He found ways to make that, to bridge that connection. And of course, Sarah cooked a lot of the Southern style food. And she felt, like she said, a lot of pressure representing Kentucky and feeling penned in by the stress of that. And then she comes out and makes shrimp and grits. So I do think Eric and Sarah are in a more difficult position when it comes to adapting what did well for them in the competition to China. Certainly, I think they probably had some time. Mike, do you have any concept of how long we had between when they left Kentucky and when they ended up in Macau?
That's a good question. I don't believe, and maybe some people can confirm on social media or something. I mean, I'd have to imagine it has to be at least a couple of weeks, maybe a month. I feel like there's always usually a sizable chunk of a break. It's not like they're flying directly to Macau from Kentucky.
I'm a big Kelsey stan on the podcast and IRL. I follow her on Instagram and I always watch her Instagram stories. I believe she said on one of them that it was 2 weeks. Which seems a lot shorter than it has in the past.
Yeah.
Like we've seen somewhere it's like, oh, your hair is way longer now than it used to be. Or like, oh, congrats, you're blonde. Or, you know, like, oh, it's been 3 months since I've seen you. You know what I mean?
When'd you lose the leg?
Congrats, you're blonde is what Kelsey's friend at the market said to her upon her returning.
I think so.
That's a tough little fortnight to just like decompress and then gauge yourself. And good on Sarah again for trying to learn another language in that time in between. Though I do want to say sorry to your girl, Antonia, but I feel like Sarah's might have been my least favorite quickfire dish just because from the way it looks white on white on white. And the fact that I think Graham made a good point here that in slicing everything razor thin and making rose apples such a key component of the dish, which was basically 90% water as it was, that there really wasn't a lot of taste there. So I can understand how that ended up happening.
Yeah, and her having to pivot once she got into those scallops and really felt how they were, I think that made the dish a little more difficult to pull off as well. So she and Eric both, I think, and Adrian to a lesser degree, I think they had issues. Eric had great flavors, but it sounded like his prep was poor. And then Sarah had like a fresh dish, but not a lot of flavor. So they both had their struggles for certain. And I think they both had their struggles in the elimination challenge. Although when I mentioned earlier the train wreck aspect of this, I didn't really sense what we were dealing with. There wasn't a clear through line, and we can get into that of specifically where some of the chefs went wrong. Maybe not Eric per se, but some of the other chefs for sure.
Yeah, before we move on, just one chef we didn't mention, just to tick that one off. Adrian, the penultimate dish she cooks on Top Chef, she ends up doing, I mean, she goes a little bit raw with Sarah as like Sarah does. She does a watermelon ceviche with her razor clam, but fries up some lotus chips on the side. Haley, you have any thoughts about what Adrian ends up putting out here?
Yeah, I think I would have enjoyed eating it, but I don't think I think it fell right in the middle where she kind of landed. Like it's fine, but it's not the most exciting thing that was there. And it wasn't the worst thing that was there.
I think she satisfied the baseline because Graham even said, you know, it's hard to mess up something like razor clams. And luckily, unlike someone like Sarah or Eric, who I think struggled with the newfound proteins, you know, Sarah's scallops were a lot bigger than she anticipated, which is why she wanted to go raw because she didn't know if she could cook them through. I believe Eric's snails were a lot chewier than what he's used to. Adrian was able to benefit from a tried and true reliable ingredient, and as a result was able to put out a tried and true reliable dish that I would say definitively number 3 out of the 5, which will be the highest position she gets into this episode, unfortunately.
Yeah, not a great episode. We'll get into that for sure.
So as Michelle wins, Pema wishes everyone a profound Gung Hae Fat Choi as we welcome in. We thought we would be done with awkward filming of holidays that hadn't happened yet.
Nope.
Never.
Chinese New Year is here. Was not there at the time.
Nor but is it here right now. Like it happened already. Am I not correct in that?
Yeah, you're correct about
like
that.
We're a couple weeks past.
That's true. Maybe if they had really wanted to time it out, they could have started everything 2 weeks early. But then that would have thrown off the Christmas challenge. I guess you have to pick your poison when it comes to what holidays you want to falsely celebrate at the wrong time of year. But the elimination challenge is they're going to have for them a very early, for us a bit late Chinese New Year party, and they, essentially the chefs have to cater it to 200 guests. Outcome, a bit of help in the form of not only 5 sous chefs and the 5 most recently eliminated chefs / dudes, but also 5 tenets of the Chinese New Year, complete with 3 ingredients that they have to use and only they can use. So I'll run them down here, and I'd love to hear from you guys as to what you personally think would have been the best choice. So Michelle picks David, who has longevity, which is peaches, noodles, and peanuts. Adrian picks Brian, who has health with eggs, broccoli, and ginger. Sarah picks Eddie Money, who has, ironically enough, not wealth. He has happiness, which is ironic on its own as well, with cauliflower, shrimp, and walnuts. Kelsey picks Brandon, who has wealth, oranges, cashews, and cabbage. And Eric gets Justin, who has togetherness with water chestnuts, coconut, and lychee. I never know how to pronounce that, but the little fruit that really got someone to quit the game in season two. Those things. Haley, looking at this group of five, is there any that sticks out to you either from a sous chef perspective or an ingredient perspective as one you would pick?
I'm pretty torn between Adrian's broccoli, eggs, and ginger. Like, I feel like those are very classic, and that's a nice base that you can really build around. Or I love the idea of Michelle's noodles, peaches, and peanuts. I love peaches in savory dishes.
What about you, Antonio?
Yeah, Michelle's the one that I would pick. It is Kelsey's was also really good for me. Like, I think that those ingredient profiles are the ones I would want to work with. Adrian's is sort of when you pick the thing that is most expected, right? Or the most like a basic or on brand or across the board expected thing, you're setting yourself up for failure in a lot of instances on Top Chef. We see this a lot. Pick the easy thing and you're in trouble. I think in Chicago, right, when they had to make the meal for the police and firefighters or whatever that was, and Spike got to pick what ingredients he wanted, and he picks like he's going to make a sandwich. He's
chicken, whatever he, tomato, yeah, chicken. Lettuce.
Yeah, it's so basic and boring, and it's like he was picking them so that other chefs couldn't use them. And Adrian's logic here was very much the same. If somebody's using ginger here, I want it to be me. I get that, but I think you put yourself in a position where you better do something really spectacular with it. Otherwise, people are like, well, it was very straightforward. I got what I expected. And I think the peach does give you the opportunity to show something off like that. Michelle pickles it, which is really cool. But I like the ingredients Kelsey got as well. So either of those two would have been something for me. What about you, Mike?
I feel like I would have gone with Kelsey's as well. I think the incorporation of oranges, to your point, Haley, about adding this element of sweetness to the savoriness. Plus, I feel like orange is like something that's utilized in Chinese cooking a bit. So it's something that can still, again, hew closely to the Chinese culture without making it. I mean, Adrian, I think, is going for the most literal interpretation, and that really gets her in trouble. You want to get into that area of, I can use these ingredients, but at the same time, picking these ingredients won't lock me into some expectations that people will have of the dish based purely on what I chose. I also think Eric might have had the hardest time, just because I feel like water chestnuts are, I see that a lot in Chinese cooking, but I can't say I see a lot of coconut or lychee. So and again, he's someone who sort of ends up cooking something that's maybe a bit less Chinese, and maybe that's just because the ingredients that were picked were not necessarily the most inherently Chinese upon first approach.
Right. Haley, what do you make of the sous chefs? Brandon is associated with wealth, Brian with health, David longevity, Eddie happiness, and Justin togetherness.
Yeah, like they definitely gave Eddie happiness as like a joke, right? Like that's amazing. I'm so excited that they brought them all back for like a challenge even earlier than the final. Like I love this cast, and I'm so happy to see more of them interact. Like, I love having a top 10 again. It's amazing. And I just want to say that I called last week or the week before, I can't remember, all the weeks are blending together, that Justin would get to go to Macau. And look at that.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Justin's in Macau.
I'll admit there was a pang of me, to your point, Haley, that was staring at these guys. And I'm like, this would have been a fun final five. I mean, maybe not necessarily. Specifically those last three, specifically the David, Eddie, Justin. And I'm like, oh, man, that was like a killer three eliminations in a row. I would have loved to see at least one of them in there.
Yeah, I was like disappointed we didn't get to see Nene again. But like, I get that it was like the last five eliminated. Like, it's right. It's fine. I get it. But
I think it speaks a little bit, what you're saying, Mike, speaks a little bit to the fact that I think some of the criticisms of this season have been that there aren't two or three just dominant chefs who are pulling everyone else up to a different level, or who are just picking people off because they fail to reach that level. Instead, I think what we have are 10 chefs that seemingly we see as a little bit interchangeable in terms of 10 really talented people who, if Brandon ends up in the final five, we could say, yeah, we could see that happening, or David or Eddie or Justin or anybody really. So I think that's really what this season showed us, is that we had a lot of equal level competition or people that were on par with each other, such that when we brought the five that had been eliminated all the way back to 10, you could look at at least a couple of them and say, I would not be surprised at all if you had been here instead of it being reversed. So I like seeing them. I did think it's funny that Eddie is happiness. Eddie gives his big cheese ball grin. I'm sure that made Kurt happy as well.
Yeah, and maybe there's more to these choices, though. I mean, Brandon gets wealth, and he does, I don't know exactly his financial situation.
He's heir to a candy fortune.
That's
Mike.
True, exactly. Yeah, exactly. He's like heir to a candy factory.
Yeah.
And he's a private chef, so I feel like that's there. Justin, they talk about this, how it does sort of represent togetherness. He did seem like, when he wasn't, you know, making fun of Wafflegate or getting frustrated at Nini, he does seem like someone who had this raucous energy to bring everyone together. Brian is health. I don't know. Seems like he's a fit dude.
He's clean and sober. I mean, he's clean and sober. Yeah.
He's also the tallest guy in the country.
I do love the irony that Adrian picks health, considering the health that she was in when Brian was eliminated.
Yeah, Kurt remarked on that and said the irony about Adrian picking Brian as a spud chef because he was an expert. I think he meant sous chef because he was an expert.
Damn, autocorrect is wreaking its havoc on our podcast for this episode.
Kurt was in piss class when he wrote this. The irony about Adrian picking Brian as a sous chef because he was an expert on pork is that she was sent below deck sick during the judges table where he went home for cooking pork. Someone should have told her, Kurt says.
Yeah, that's true. She does end up missing out on the one time when they said, hey, dude, you really effed up your pork. You're going home. And she's like, you know what I thought of when I thought of pork? Brian. That's a guy who never screws it up, especially not standing in a hot tub.
I like the it's a double edged sword here, right? Because you pick for ingredients, but you also can pick for who the person is that you want to work with. And we heard about David and the Portuguese background that he has. And we know from what Graham was talking about or just facts that Macau itself has a heavy Portuguese influence. So with picking first, Michelle says, like, I wanted the David's Portuguese influence on this dish. She probably liked the ingredients as well. But Adrian's talking about ginger and Brian and pork. Sarah talks about Eddie and happiness. We don't really hear. But the sneaky thing, Haley, was apparently Kelsey knew that Brandon had this Asian food background.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't hear about that, did we? Like, I guess that's because we spent so much time in the beginning not learning about these amazing people. But
I do remember that the one challenge he was actually very close to winning was an episode 2 quick fire where it was the Gale pregnancy challenge where he made a Korean barbecue bulgogi bowl.
Yes.
And so it does feel like he works best in that realm, though. I don't know if Kelsey's just been like a silent observer taking notice of these tenets of everyone's personalities, but good on her for pointing that out because it ends up helping get her the win. It is interesting how this episode really showcased some of these chefs really relying on their sous chefs for things, and it worked for them or against them. I'm looking at you, Eric, getting Justin to try your food, and he insists that it's fine. It doesn't need more spice. Cut to Padma trying the food and saying it's not spicy enough. I do say, as much as we mock Adrian for picking Brian when he went home for pork, Michelle picks David for knowing Portuguese when he went home for cooking a meal that reminds him of Portugal. So, like, you know, I have to cast a wide net here in terms of blame.
Yeah, we obviously love the gamesmanship about Top Chef, and we talk about it a lot here on this podcast. But I thought this was an especially interesting element of it because we also didn't talk about how Michelle, because she won the quickfire, was tasked with picking the order of people. That didn't really seem to come into play here. We didn't hear anything about how, well, I picked so-and-so to pick second because I wanted Adrian to pick second because I wanted her to have the best shot at it. We didn't really hear about the gamesmanship of Michelle's choice. Did either of you think there was anything in that at all?
I think if anyone else but Michelle was picking, there would have been, but it's Michelle, so...
I don't know. Michelle's like the silent, the quiet storm, as her mentor talked about.
I wouldn't have even thought about, you know, messing up with other people. I just want everyone to have like a fair and great opportunity to cook well. Where Sarah would be like, oh, I'm picking you to go next because I want this person to lose and blah, 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 blah.
I mean, if that was the case, though, I feel like one of the fairest thing I've just been to go down the line. It is interesting that Michelle just sort of picked what seemed to be a random order. I agree with you, Haley, though. I'm not looking at anything too far into it because it doesn't seem like, at least she knew she wanted to pick first and she got that opportunity. So I think that didn't, whatever happened afterwards didn't matter to her.
it's weird because I feel like if she had let Eric pick second, for example, he probably, at least from a chef to chef standpoint, would have picked Justin anyway. Mm-hmm. Ingredients wise, I don't know if that's how that plays out, but I didn't sense that anybody got a chef with the, you know, got a chef assigned to them or picked a chef that they were frustrated with, which we do see on Top Chef from time to time for sure.
But that's just like this season. Like they all got along so well. We never saw anything of like this person shit. I don't want to work with them. They're terrible at cooking. Like it's just been one of those seasons where I honestly feel like no matter who got whom question mark, I don't know if I use that correctly.
It's weird because there was the waffle gate, but it doesn't seem like,
but like that had
really
no impact
lingered.
Really, right, yeah, like it was just like I'm done. Sarah was like, I'm done with it, let's let it go, we're good. So like it, any combination of 10 chefs I think would have been fine.
To be fair, have we really had that since Katsuji and John in season 14? I guess you could say Claudette and Tanya in season 15, but they didn't necessarily make, you know, oh no, I guess Claudette did make the final eight because she made Restaurant Wars, but still it does feel like, I agree with you that this season does feel like a pretty chummy cast overall. Even someone like Nini and Justin seem to like let bygones be bygones when it came to him trying to help her get back into the competition. But I wonder if that's also just the recent trend when it comes to casting these chefs.
Yeah,
and like reality television in general, like I feel like we're going in a direction that's more like let's all be friends rather than like, you know, the one on one drama. Like it's just, it's completely different. Like I say every week, I've been watching old seasons of Top Chef, and it's almost like a completely different show from what we're watching now.
And sometimes it's only one chef, right, that sets this off, because thinking back a couple of seasons, Top Chef California had a little bit more drama. Certainly some of the more drama oriented contestants are the ones who go home early, but Philip is the only one I think that makes the final eight who has any real drama with the other contestants that are left.
But he didn't even know he had drama with other contestants.
Yeah, he was just kind of, it was just kind of the way he was, right? And I, you know, Marjorie was, she had no patience for really anybody, but by the time we got to the final eight, it wasn't like she couldn't stand Isaac, or that Isaac remembered earlier when Marjorie was mean to him and they fought. Like it wasn't like that at all. So I do think, you know, there was some drama in that early season though. We had Grayson being very upset and Angelina fighting with Giselle.
God,
like, there was a lot
Grayson
of drama. Yeah.
Oh,
there was a lot of drama in early California. So I just, you're right. I think, Haley, about the evolution of reality TV in general. Like we have come a long way from what you just watched recently with Marcel and the head shaving. That is early reality TV drama.
That's like, that would not happen on television today,
right?
And I believe my boyfriend Ethan actually watched that episode with me, and he's like, I can't even like fathom this happening now. I'm like, I know exactly. And you know, even with The Bachelor, this season we did see them really try and pit two of these women against each other. But like that was over after two episodes. Like, you know, it's just doesn't play into things as much as it used to.
Well, I feel like, and not to get too tangential to previous seasons, but Haley, you're watching Top Chef DC right now, and you just experienced Restaurant Wars, which has pea puree incident, which was even like in season 10 when they say, you know, here's one infamous incident from each season, the pea puree is front and center when it comes to season 7. I can't remember, did that go the way of Wafflegate, where it pretty much gets like shirked off over the next few weeks? Or is that something that really sticks in the craw of people like Ed and Alex who, you know, get involved in the situation?
Yeah, so it seems to be kind of like a theme so far. I believe Alex does not win, but he hasn't gone home yet, and from what I've seen. And so what happened was, yeah, like Alex used a pea puree, whether it was Ed's or not or whatever, he used it and he won because the pea puree was so good. And then the next episode in Restaurant Wars, everyone was still mad at him. They were so mad at him, they didn't even let him conceptualize a dish. He like cooked one and they forced him to be front of house, which he wasn't that good at, but his team won anyway. And the other Restaurant Wars team came in and said, Alex should be going home. Like, he didn't do anything. He sucks as a chef. He sucks at cooking, like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there might have been another episode I've watched after that, but I cannot remember right now. But it seems to be like a storyline that's going on throughout at least the middle part of the season.
So I guess that's more of like a transitional period when it comes to, this is not necessarily, I remember season 3, that guy Joey, like, and how he's screaming at everybody in the stew room, or even Dale Talday, you know, punching lockers.
Yeah, during a quick fire.
Yeah, and it seems like these middle seasons were more of like there are big dramatic pieces. There was some ugly stuff going on in season 9, but it really does feel like in the modern day eras of Top Chef, you have your flash in the pan assholiness. You know, even a season like Top Chef Boston, which I loved, you had Aaron, who was a pretty big jackhole for the first like 5 episodes.
Yeah, he was real bad.
But it feels like we don't necessarily have these personal confrontations that last an entire season like we did back in the day of Top Chef. And I guess that's just a sign of a paradigm shift in the show structure, or maybe to your point, Haley, that that's something that's sort of out the window now, building up these rivalry structures or big moments of drama, because they're going to try to create the drama during the challenges on the screen instead of trying to pit them against each other.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's very interesting to watch it all in like one shot, and especially to be watching old seasons along with this currently airing one. It's I would recommend it. 10 out of 10 experience.
Do you find that, have you hit the point yet where, I mean, I don't think you have if you're in DC, at some point, right, the show cuts away from the stew room drama. It stops them from getting in there, being in there and getting drunk while certain chefs are getting other feedback, or the teams are being pulled out one at a time. And you know, the winning team is out there. So the losing team is in there just stewing around, literally picking at each other, just having to hate it. Now they all come out at once and they just step aside and they're on camera while they step aside. It's a different show when you don't have the stew room drama.
It's so different.
Yeah, that actually happened in the very first season of the cover. That happened in season 12. And I remember us remarking on it, that was the first season, I believe, where they kept them all out there for judges' table. So maybe that's sort of a sign of the big shift in production, and therefore the way they sort of depict drama was they really put everything out in the open now instead of, you know, keeping them in confined spaces and sort of letting them go at each other.
Yeah, and drink and get drunk while they're doing it. I mean, we see the most dramatic moment of this season came in the locker room at Rupp Arena when Sarah was pounding wine and it was getting increasingly more emotional as they were dealing with the aftermath of Wafflegate. So I think it's telling that when you get rid of the stew room, the word stew has so many meanings there in that context. You're literally getting rid of that element of the show. And I think that is, Haley, as you're observing, I think that is a mark in the evolution of reality TV in general, where we go from the real world style reality TV cooped up drama to more of just the kind of reality shows we have nowadays. So I think that's part of it as well. It's a much slicker reality competition show now and less of a reality show about chefs who compete in cooking challenges as well.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's also because Top Chef has gained a lot of acclaim in the culinary sphere. I mean, both chefs on and off the show have called this the greatest cooking competition in the world, the most acclaimed one, where you have chefs that have such pristine reputations to their name and statuses and awards to come in and cook on a show like Top Chef. I wonder if it's essentially that, for lack of a better term, Top Chef grew up, that it knew what its place is in the cooking world, and it's honoring that by treating the show seriously. Even if they do some silly doinky things sometimes, it's still going to say, we're going to have people cook first and, you know, converse second.
Next time you see something that's doinky, I want you to point it out, Mike.
I'll point towards the dragons that end up filling out the middle of this dance here at the MGM.
Padma says they're twerking, which I thought, you speak of like rude.
I was going to say, did she take a page out of Graham's book?
Yeah, it's not great. Like, who knew lions could twerk, Padma says. And I'm like, wow, okay. All right. That's fine. It is what it is.
Yeah, Haley, do you have anything to say about the decor of the MGM Macau? I got to say, I love those giant hummingbirds dripped down from the ceiling.
I almost wanted more. Like, it was just kind of like a boring hall. And then like some decorations, like give me like full on decor, like go to town with it.
Well, let's go to town on these dishes.
What a transition, Michael. Wow. You're just
a
professional.
Pro.
You're
He's
so good.
Pro.
Thank you so much.
Not
so,
doinky in any way.
Opposite of doinky, anti-doink. So we'll go dish by dish here, since these are elimination dish challenges after all. Let's start with Michelle, who helps her longevity by cooking a dish about longevity. Antonio, what did you make of her pork lettuce wrap?
I thought I wanted to eat it. Like, this was the dish of the whole challenge that I would have probably immediately gone to. Some of them with the descriptions and with what the judges said sounded delicious, and I would want to try them as well. But her dish really appealed to me, and I thought was something that I would want to jump on. She seemed like she did well in terms of conceiving the dish with what the ingredients that she had and the flavor profiles she was working with. I think the feedback was good. It seemed like a really a smart dish. The feedback all seemed to really revolve around that she did well with it. As we said earlier, I think the fact that she's from San Francisco, it cannot hurt her. She mentions that she's been to Chinese New Year celebrations in San Francisco. She's inspired by them. She wants to cook some of the food that she's seen at those kind of events. So she is in her wheelhouse for sure. And it is not surprising at all to me that she puts up a really good dish here.
Yeah. Haley, what do you think about Michelle's elimination performance, and how do you think this bodes for her making the finale, considering she now only has to get through one more elimination challenge?
I love how simple Michelle went with this. It was simple, but it was super impactful, and I think that's something that's super important on Top Chef. Like Antonia said, like, I want to eat this right now. It sounds delicious. Michelle, I'm still just feeling like she's next to go. Like, I keep feeling like she's next to go. Because I feel like a final three of Kelsey, Eric, and Sarah just makes sense to me. So I like what Michelle's doing, but I'm worried about her hashtag longevity here.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that I agree with you that I think those three is probably the most satisfying top three based on their stories. Say what you want to about Michelle, has clearly proved, especially in the latter half of this season, that she is an extremely talented chef, considering she produced one of the best dishes of the season. I still think from a storytelling standpoint, there's still something left to be desired. We're still finding out things about Michelle 13 episodes in that I wish we had found out, you know, in episode one, that I think is still sort of stuck in my craw, where I do agree that at least from that perspective, I still see her going next. But considering the way that she's cooking, I would not be surprised if she snuck her way into the finale, because I agree with you both. This looks fantastic. I'm not a big fan of lettuce wraps. I feel like, say what you want to about the compromising nature of wraps as they are, where if you take two bites, it falls apart in your hands. Substitute, you know, a pretty sturdy piece of tortilla with a piece of lettuce, and I feel like that increases the instability of it tenfold. But I think she was able to pull off something here that's well-seasoned. They talk about how it's perfectly ratioed. I mean, she might receive, honestly, the best compliment of all five dishes, with Tom saying that this could be a dish made by a young contemporary Chinese chef. That has to be high commendations, that you have so fully immersed yourself in the culture that you could, this could be something that comes from somebody who lives here day in and day out. And she was able to breeze in and make something akin to that.
Yeah, they obviously heavily featured that comment in all the promos for this episode. I was wondering who got that great bit of a compliment from Tom, and it was Michelle. I think, though, that considering the feedback that she got and how incredible that little moment of it is, Kelsey's dish had to be interstellar. Like, it had to be really off the charts good, because Michelle doesn't win with that kind of feedback. So, and not only does it make Michelle look good, I think it makes Kelsey look really good.
All right, let's move completely to the other side of the spectrum here in terms of performance. Let's talk about the dish that ultimately ends up getting Adrian eliminated here. Her take on pork fried rice. Haley, what did you make of her canapé?
I was disappointed that it was a canapé, and I get like she wanted to do something that stood out a bit, but I think it stood out for the wrong reasons. And, you know, reading sticky fried rice cake with hoisin braised pork belly and roasted chili aioli, it sounds delicious, but when you're only getting like one bite of it, it's like, come on, like, give me a little more. Especially, I get if you're out of one of those events early on where it's like 12 people are making things, but like, there's five of you, make a bigger dish.
Yeah, Antonia, what did you make of Adrian's choices here? You said how she definitely had some expectations to live up to, considering that she does pick the most basic ingredients. How do you think she was able to utilize them?
She went so straightforward. I mean, she made like pork on a rice cake. Even when we saw her and Brian in the concept of the dish talking about what should I call it, Brian's like, call it pork fried rice. So it is very on the nose. And canapé, maybe not the best idea. You're serving 200 people, so you have to be smart. And I get that when you conceive of the dish like that, you're like, I got to make sure the service is right. But it seemed like even in the service, she had issues. Like they were doing this like a la minute, like, I'm not sure, like they were having to do it to order essentially. And she talks about, there were a lot of things I wish I could have done on this dish that we didn't get done in the kitchen. So it's like, well, if you're going to be very straightforward with your dish and you're doing something like pork fried rice and you can't even get it done and it's a canapé, what is you doing, baby? Like, that's the part I didn't understand from the concept of her dish to the execution of the dish. Seemed like a pretty bang on, straightforward, simple dish. And yet it seemed like she had struggled with the delivery of it and it was a canapé. So it's like, what's going on here? Like, I don't really know where the failures were with the dish. When they tried it, they said, you know, it was tasty. Tom said, maybe not enough umami flavor. And Padma, I think her mouth got set on fire by how hot temperature wise it was. But it didn't seem like they hated it. So I do think the overall feedback, Tom just said it didn't pop. And Padma said, what, the components didn't talk to each other? I'm not sure what that really even means from a feedback standpoint. I guess it just wasn't that cohesive of a dish.
Yeah, I suppose so, which is interesting considering that, again, she went with a very basic approach, and you think that when you deconstruct a dish that those elements would just inherently talk to one another because they're mixed together. I'll admit I was a little disappointed that the egg was not utilized more, that it just got mixed into an aioli, considering that if she doesn't take on pork fried rice, egg is such a great binder of those ingredients that, you know, I know that her she didn't have any problems with her fried sticky rice cake, but I kind of wanted it to be incorporated a bit more. I'm not too crazy about the broccoli florets. I know that she had to use broccoli in there, but I agree with what the judges were saying that it looks, A, they look too big, especially if you want to make this a canapé, and B, it looks a little basic. And actually, I think from what I've been researching, it's a bit westernized as well. I don't believe there's a lot of like broccoli based Chinese food dishes that are authentically Chinese or Cantonese or Mandarin. It feels like that's something that really got brought over with the P.F. Chang's of it all. So maybe with her going in this pork fried rice with broccoli direction might not have necessarily, helped her in terms of staying in tune with the culture, ironically enough. But yeah, this, I agree with you, Antonio, that I think deconstructed pork fried rice is a good idea. I just feel like the number of choices made between the size of it, between the portions of it, between the utilization of the egg and just these, you know, it basically looking like you just threw some broccoli on top. It was just, unfortunately, all the bad makings of a not great dish. And I know we said coming into this that Adrian is going to have to really impress in Macau. And while she did fine in the quick fire, I think this just shows that, you know, maybe she did well enough to make it to top five. But it's clear that the other four, I think, thought through this challenge a bit more to edge her out.
Yeah, but like I said, it is a situation where it seemed like, even though we heard the most negative feedback of the dish about the dishes only when they were deciding who goes home, it seemed like the judges still did like all the food that they ate. So yeah, that's at least a good thing for the chefs for sure.
Yeah, I feel like actually from the basketball challenge on, say for a couple of elements from people's dishes, they've really loved these, what everyone has put out in this season. We have not had a season 15-esque Tom, you know, giving everyone a pep talk about what they need to do in order to do better in the competition. It seems like these chefs have been impressing, at least in the past few episodes, which is good. I think it shows the level of enjoyment these judges are getting across. I do completely agree that we should repeat that these judges really, really loved all these dishes. It's just a matter of minor quibbles. And while Adrian did not necessarily produce a bad dish, it was the worst of a really good bunch. And so by default, she had to go. Haley, what did you think about Eric's take on togetherness, his coconut curry with the pork shoulder and the pork ears?
It sounds great. And I think it's just like one of the situation, like you're saying before, where it was good, but it just wasn't as good as the best ones. And, you know, there wasn't enough spice. There could have been some more flavor to it. Just didn't come off as great as I think Eric wanted it to, or, you know, that Eric actually thought it did.
Mm-hmm. Antonio, I want to hear from you about, this was also publicized on the promos, Eric speaks up at judge's table where Padma makes this critique that, you know, with your Thai chili that you made, your curry, I couldn't really detect what was in it. Specifically, they were talking about how the lychee had gotten lost. And Eric speaks up and says, you know, I respectfully disagree. I feel like when you make a curry, specifying ingredients isn't important. All that matters is tasting good, because everyone has, you know, a type of curry that they're used to. What did you make of Eric's decision to sort of push back on the judges with that?
I think he handled it well. Adrian pushes back a little bit too. I don't think the judges, I don't think it affected what they were deciding about the dishes. I think Eric pushed back the way he pushed back. I understand what he was saying. We also, though, heard the feedback that he used the richest form of coconut, which with the richest meat. And so you're in a situation where maybe it wasn't just that the lychee didn't stand out enough. It was some of these other choices that were made in the composition of his dish, which impacted all of that. It wasn't just that the curry was tasty. I think he was in a little bit of a difficult spot, and it did sound like Justin maybe gave him the feedback about the heat of the thing, but it wasn't like the lack of the heat of the thing was why the judges had issues with the dish. They basically said lack of clarity, it's muddy. And I understand that he would want to step up for his dish and say it's not muddy, or the muddiness was intended, or the muddiness doesn't affect whether he made a good curry or not. But I think when you're in the final five here, the judges enjoyed everything. I think these finer points are the difference between why you go home or not. So I do think it's important to speak up for your dish and to speak up for the choices that you made. It's a fascinating disagreement, right? Because Eric comes from a culture where curry certainly would have been prevalent in foods that he's making. But we know Padma is somebody who on the show has talked about what curries are important to her and why they jump off when a certain chef makes a really good version of it. So it's an interesting debate, especially between those two people, about what was appropriate and what was not. Adrian's was a little less effective for me. Yes, she was like, yes and no. And it's like, I don't know, Adrian. I already called you out on your BS over changing dishes with the heat and Muhammad Ali. So I'm not sure I'm buying it here. So I think Eric was a little more effective with his.
And I will say, in general, I'm totally for chefs. Now, I wouldn't say talking back to judges, but at least voicing their opinions. And it seems like from what I looked up, I believe Tom is as well. I think Tom is totally fine with, even though these are judges that are ultimately eliminating them at the end of the day, he's totally fine with them saying, well, that's not the way I intended. Let me explain how it happened. I feel like this came down to a miscommunication where I think Eric took Padma's comment to mean that she wanted to essentially do a taste test with the curry and figure out what each and every ingredient was in it. But I think what Padma was saying was that it was simple. It lacked complexity, so that she wasn't tasting hints of all these elements in it. It all just sort of came out as one taste. Haley, do you have any thoughts about what went down here?
It always makes me a little anxious when the contestants talk back to the judges. And like, Eric wasn't like yelling at them or anything. I'm just deeply afraid of conflict. So I avoid any situation in which I have to get into conflict. I like that they're comfortable enough to feel like they can have a discussion with these judges and that it's not such like an open and closed case. And, you know, that they are able to kind of defend themselves or, you know, explain themselves or give a point that they think is important.
All right, let's move on here to Sarah's take on shrimp and grits. Antonio, what did you think about Sarah's take, her very first attempt at cauliflower grits? Did it work out well for her?
I think it did. I mean, I think that this is the one where I was the most confused by what I was seeing on my TV, because it seemed like maybe there were multiple opinions about this dish because she makes the dish. I think this is the issue, is she wants to get away from Southern food, and then she puts shrimp and grits out there. That is not as I think the difference between what she and Kelsey do, what Kelsey does in this episode is very significant because Kelsey takes a Southern style or Southern idea with the pot liquor that she's making and then evolves it with all of the umami and Asian ingredients that she uses. Sarah makes a shrimp and grits here that Tom liked, but maybe he didn't like the grits completely. And then Padma's the one that's saying it's too salty. We know Tom likes salty food, and Sarah had a ham broth, I think. So I think
she made more hot ham water.
hot ham water. It had a smack of ham. Yeah. So I do think that there was middling levels of success with this dish. My issue is if she's not able to do what Kelsey did, which is take the dish that she's trying to prepare that is meaningful to her or has some importance to her and make it so that it is evolved into a reflection of the place in a different way. She's going to be behind Kelsey for sure. And she needs to be ahead of Kelsey if she wants to win. So I didn't see that in this episode. It will be a challenge for Sarah going forward.
I'm not really a grits expert, so it's hard to tell like what would be good or would be bad or not work. I don't think I'd particularly enjoy grits. So shrimp and cauliflower grits didn't really speak to me. But anything with a broth does. So I would try regardless.
Yeah, I think for me, to your point, Antonio, I guess the most Chinese influenced part of this dish was the sake poached walnuts. And yeah, that was it. It really did feel like shrimp and grits. Like they basically say when they first try her dish, oh, this feels like Southern style. And right, that's the difference between her creating shrimp and grits and throwing in some Chinese elements as opposed to Kelsey, who's, oh, this Southern dish reminds me of these ingredients. Let me try to prepare them in a similar way.
Yeah, and that just didn't pop in the way. Even Kelsey admitting that she doesn't know the names of all the ingredients that she's putting in her dish, but she wants to include the umami flavor profiles. It just doesn't pop in that way when Sarah is poaching walnuts and sake. The thing is, I'm confident that Sarah has it in her, and I'm confident that she will be able to succeed doing her food. But like I said, she has to be better than Kelsey at doing what this final series of episodes, which is calling for, which is doing your food in a way that reflects and is inspired by the location. And that's the part where I think maybe the ingredients she got put her in a difficult position, or maybe she just didn't do as good of a job with it as some of the other chefs. But not the worst episode for Sarah. I did not think that she was really in any great danger of going home. So that says something.
Yeah, I agree. I think much like the others, I think there were more. She was nitpicked as well, but I think the conceptualizing, they had greater umbrage with Eric and Adrian than they did with Sarah. I do question the choice to have pork and shrimp in a dish together, but it seems like those proteins, I guess, mix pretty well together, specifically since she was preparing the pork in a different way than the shrimp. So it ended up not mattering too much in the scheme of things.
Yeah, this is a dish that I would really have liked to give a shot and try, because that I feel like I'm losing some of the complexity of the dish by not trying it. Like the ingredients and their interrelationships just don't pop off the page to me as well as some of these other ones.
All right, Haley, Kelsey thought she was getting to a bit of hot water with literally some hot water before the commercial break. You know, her beans are just coming out to the right doneness, but the water would still cook them. She tries to cool them off, and she ends up being successful here to make a perfect winning elimination dish. Give me all your thoughts about Kelsey's mushroom broth with a bunch of different stuff in it, including sausage, cashews, cilantro, and chives.
Oh, it just sounds so good, every part of it. And, you know, the judges really spoke to her being able to just build flavor upon flavor upon flavor, and it just sounds amazing. I was very nervous during the bean episode, very nervous for her, that the beans were going to be overcooked and she couldn't rescue them. But I'm really so excited for Kelsey. And I'm so glad that she's really, you know, doing well right now.
Yeah, Antonio, another scare that Kelsey faces is initially her and Brandon were talking about, you know, utilizing a pork belly and just sort of putting it on top of things. But when they go to this traditional meal at night and Adrian vocalizes that she's doing the same thing, Kelsey decides to pivot in that moment and instead decides to braise the pork belly and use the liquid and then chop it up a bit and throw it in there with all the other myriad ingredients she has in there. Do you think that pivot is what won her the challenge?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I think the she put a ton of ingredients in a really complex pot liquor and everything that went with that. I mean, using the pork for that pot liquor is important, I think, because you want that fatty element to it. You want that meaty element to it. You want that to be a driver in what's happening. So I do think that's important. But as far as winning the dish, that pivot, I don't know. I think there was a lot of fake news going on with the presentation of what was happening with Kelsey's dish. I mean, she was so concerned about her beans. Oh my gosh, these beans are going to be overcooked. We're going to go to commercial. We're not going to know. Oh yeah, the beans are fine. No problem with the beans in the dish at all.
It was very Amazing Race of like, oh no, yeah, something's horrible. Exactly. It's the end of the world commercial come back. Okay, it ended up being fine.
Yeah. And so I think that her dish was so good that they had to kind of create some drama. It does make me wonder from an edit standpoint, if we're watching our winner and watching her, quote unquote, overcome adversity, when in reality, the adversity is in many ways manufactured by the show. That I don't know about. I can't speak to that for sure. But that's the sort of thing that I watch when I'm watching this as far as an edit. Like, was there really drama with Kelsey's dish, or are we creating the drama because we want somebody that we're rooting for to have drama that they're overcoming? So I think she crushed it. I think she crushed it for all the reasons we've talked about. And it's not surprising to me that she came here ready to play ball. And I think what's going to have to happen is some of these other chefs are going to have to step their game up. And I think Michelle certainly appears to be game and ready for that fight. I'll be interested to see with Sarah and Eric how they're able to adapt for sure.
And one person that unfortunately is not continuing that journey with them is Adrian, who gets eliminated here. Haley, eulogize Adrian a bit for me. Considering the way that she started, I feel like she's come a long way from me accusing her of cooking food akin to the Olive Garden.
I think we've all been a little tough on Adrian for no particular reason. I'm not really sure why. Like, I know I've been tough on Adrian, and like, she's like a fine person. She was just never particularly exciting to me in the way that a lot of the other contestants were. I know that Adrian will have a great long career, and she's cool. Everyone seems to like her on the show, which is a really great sign.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that she'll be able to do what Sarah did. I was inspired by the fact that her family has lived on that land and farmed it for so long. And that's something that is in my life and is meaningful to me. So it's meaningful that she really appreciated that. And she wants to go back home and maybe cook there, she thinks maybe. And the sort of things that Sarah has done. So those are things that I hope she's able to achieve. I mean, when this was filmed a year ago, almost at this point, this is the Adrian that we saw. Her life has changed and is changing, and I'm sure is very different now than when she was on the show. She did not get her win, so that's unfortunate. But we saw her best moment was definitely Restaurant Wars, and how great she was at Restaurant Wars and probably deserving of the win. Nothing against Brian there. That was certainly a team effort, and Brian certainly pulled his part with the front of house stuff, but Adrian crushed that. She was so good in that episode. And a lot of contestants that go home at this point in the show have not had that kind of standout moment like Adrian did. So good on her for that. I think that moment spoke to what a talented leader and chef she was. And I'm sure that that person that was able to lead in Restaurant Wars like that will find success in this field to the degree that she wants it, hopefully.
Oh, I think she's going to kick ass at Farm to Table. I honestly, and I have not received, you know, my communications back with her yet, so I do not yet know how she feels about this, but I did ask her, you know, she even says when leaving the game that it was her goal to be able to move back home, start right. a family, and have a restaurant. And, I mean, one of those is definitely coming to fruition very soon, considering she is expecting with her husband, but I do wonder, you know, what's stopping her from moving back home? And Farm to Table is so big. Tyler from last season lives in rural Connecticut as well, and he's had a lot of success with that Farm to Table stuff. So I feel like she can really benefit from that agriculture-inspired cuisine. I give her all the kudos in the world for recovering from a very shaky start. If we remember back in episode one where, you know, she had this one plan, but it turns out that she was way too ambitious with trying to make this homemade pasta. So she completely pivots and ends up in the bottom as a result. Very next elimination challenge, she's in the top. She totally impresses with this catfish that she makes. And it was a bit of an up and down for her. She does end up winning one quick fire challenge when she is on her deathbed. But other than that, it's more about, you know, getting by and being able to avoid truly hitting the bottom of the bottom. So I do admire her consistency for that. It's hard to come by in Top Chef. Unfortunately, I think when it came to resumes, she was sort of 5 out of 5. And I think some key mistakes, small mistakes, but key mistakes end up sending her out here at 5. But I'm very excited to see what happens with both her family and her culinary career in the future. Which takes us to our top four, baby. We are officially moving into a top three. It was confirmed in the next time on. So we have one more round of clean play to get through. Looks like we are having, you know, Graham introduces Chekhov's durian in this episode with how pungent and spiky they are. Looks like they get to cook with them and they are not too pleased about it. And their elimination challenge, I mean, I'm going to assume it's the family visit. I don't know if you guys have any speculation, but it seems like the way that they were looking at these mystery people, it's going to be some sort of family-inspired challenge, because they do that at this point in the season. And you'd have to assume that they, it allows them to put their heart and soul into this last gasp before they get into the finals.
Very cool if their family members did get to go to Macau. I think that's awesome, and I hope that is what we're getting.
Hopefully Justin's girlfriend went too, just to make sure he's included.
Well, and Eric's his wife was pregnant, right? Like seriously pregnant. So I'm not sure that that's something she could do. So I don't know.
They'll have a Voltaggio come in again.
Yeah. Eric, I'm back. This is redemption, baby.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how this is going to play out, but it does seem like that's what it will be.
All right, let's go around the horn. I want to hear your bold prediction as to who is going to be the one person out of these four to not make the finale. Haley, I know you sort of hedged your bet beforehand, but just to confirm, you think that Michelle's going to come out number four here?
Yeah, I'm sticking to it. And the more I think about it, the more you point out with the story. And I know that Burke has told us that, you know, Top Chef doesn't edit like the other reality TV shows we watch, but it's hard to break ourselves out of that thinking. And so just based on the stories we've gotten, and even from like the very first episode, it just makes way more sense to have Eric and Sarah and Kelsey being in the final three, which I'm really excited about. I'm excited about a final three for the first time in a long time.
What do you think, Antonio?
I think, based on what I've been saying throughout this podcast, that it's going to be Eric or Sarah. I really hope in my heart of hearts that it's not Sarah. So I'm going to say that it's going to be Eric. That won't make me happy either.
The final three of three women would be my favorite thing of all time.
And the women that would be there would be awesome. So it would be a great opportunity to see those three just battle it out. And I think it would be enough of a contrast for what's going on, or there would be like, it's almost like a sliding scale with chefs who prepare Southern food, but then one is adapted better to the Asian elements. And then one chef who is from San Francisco and is able to do Asian food, but does Italian food. So I think that would be really cool. I think Eric and Kelsey are going to have to step their game. Or Eric and Sarah are going to have to step their game up this next episode, as I've been saying. So I think as of right now, I'd have to pick one of them as being on the outs based on what we've seen so far. If you want to go with what Haley is saying and talk about the edit, I can certainly appreciate that that might be a different version of this story. But I think the way Michelle cooked in this episode, it's hard for me to say it's not Michelle then, or it's not Kelsey in the final three. So then you're down to Eric and Sarah, and it's got to be one of those two going home, which would make me very sad, like I said.
And if Michelle makes the finale, that would be the third, actually the fourth finale in a row where the Last Chance Kitchen returnee ends up making the finale. So it's become a much, much larger part of the universe than I think we initially expected.
What do you think, Mike? Who do you think the final three looks like?
Yeah, I was really between those two, between Eric and Michelle, just because I could see either one of them going. And maybe this is me being suckered in by the next time on. But Eric is someone who's like, well, I guess that had to happen. So it seems like that's something he could have said either out of context or something he would say in response to his elimination. I'm going to trust in the storytelling here. And I've been wrong about this before. Look at my draft team, but I'm going to go with Michelle. I think it would be super satisfying to see a final three of Kelsey, Sarah, and Eric. That being said, we've spoken about how wide open this field is. I feel like this final four, especially, I think what Michelle has, two wins, Eric has three, Kelsey has two, Sarah has two. Like, they're all pretty even. Like you said, there's no real front runner here. So I could see Sarah going home next week. I feel like Kelsey might make it. I feel like Kelsey's, again, peaking at the right time. So I feel like she's the only person who's locked in there. But I could honestly see any of the other three going.
Yeah, so it's wide open, I think. I mean, maybe people that are listening feel differently about this, and maybe they feel like it's a lock for Kelsey to win this, or it's a lock for Michelle or something like that. I think Josh had said a few weeks ago that he thought the story was Michelle is going to come back in and just win this thing. I'd be interested to hear if his opinion has changed on that subject. But it does seem a little bit wide open, and so that's good. And the fan favorite voting is still live as well. On an unrelated note, by the way, my nephew is trying to do this experiment for school, so it would really help him if you could, to the number 27286, just text the word Sarah. That would be really helpful for him for the school project he's working on.
Is Sarah just like a name that he loves?
It's an acronym.
I was really wondering where you're going with this.
It stands for like student assisted responsive assignment or something. I think he has to see how many responses can be sent in.
Wait, is the student assisting or is the student being assisted?
Hey, listen, I'm not teaching the kid, so I don't really know how this plays out. But I just know that what he asked me to do is have everyone text the all caps S-A-R-A to 272286, and he said that would really help him.
Haley, do you want to come up with an acronym for Kelsey?
I know my brain can't do that right now, can't do it, and I don't know the number.
Well, I believe that the final four here are Eddie, Eric, Kelsey, and Sarah, which is awesome. And I guess we'll go down to two next week, and then we'll find out the winner next time. So we shall see. I mean, the fact that, you know, three of our final four are in the top for fan favorite voting, I think definitely says something in terms of the overall likability of this cast. So no matter who you may vote for or who's
27286 Sarah, that's all. Then no problem.
We'll just play that backwards and loop it over the closing music here just to get it in people's brains. To finish things off before we leave from this decadent meal, let's go around the horn. Haley, anything to plug?
As always, I'm doing the Bachelor podcast. That's still going strong. Fence update hasn't been jumped yet, so hopefully next week we'll finally get the fence jump we've been seeing since, I don't know, December promos. We've been seeing it for months.
When does the season end? Like 2 weeks from now? Did they just
not
have the final
soon
four?
Enough, Michael? Not soon enough.
Well, because I was going to ask, what do you think is going to happen first? Are we going to get a Top Chef winner crown before or after Colton jumps the fence?
After, because I've been promised that it's on tomorrow night's episode. So this week we have two episodes, and next week we have a two-part finale. So next week is the last week.
Can I just be completely dumb here? Is jump the fence? Is it talking about sexual thing?
No, it's not a euphemism. He literally jumps a fence. He gets so upset that he jumps over a fence. Like, I'll have to send you the clip, Antonio, because it's pretty impressive, honestly.
Yeah, it's a feat of athleticism.
Yeah, and then he goes missing from production for 2 days. They literally thought they were going to have to like cancel the whole season because
the behavior of a man who definitely needs to have sex is all I can say.
Yeah.
Listen, maybe he just got a little bit of quickfire in his system and then just went a little cuckoo, went a little doinky.
That quickfire will get you. Definitely goofballs.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that podcast there, you know, the usual. And then Instagram and Twitter at @hstrong_. My blog is strongtakes.ca. My most recent post right now is what I read in February. And one of those books was Padma Lakshmi's, and it was really good. So check out that if you want to see what else I had to say about her book.
Can you give a quick review of Padma's book?
It was so engaging and so much more interesting than I could have ever expected. She's lived a lot of life, and she's very honest about it.
Maybe that's just a book of Padma side eye in terms of her life experiences. That just makes me want to check it out more.
Kind of. Yeah, it's really good. And, you know, I have a hard time with the a memoir that doesn't name names or like isn't super interesting. Like I read Ellie Kemper's late last year, and like that wasn't particularly interesting. But Busy Phillips, like she named names, like she gave me the hot gossip I wanted, and I felt like Padma's leaned more towards the Busy Phillips, where she named names and gave me reasons and like told me everything I wanted to know.
All right, Antonio, do you have any hot reads that you want to plug or anything else?
Tom said don't do it for the gram in this episode, so I'm not going to plug Instagram at all.
And Graham Elliott promptly scoffed and then dabbed.
Yeah, and then said, dude, we're going to drop some sick flavors. throw Don in some sick flavors. Sorry. No, I want to plug that whoever was doing that tea dance in this episode that we didn't talk about. That was freaking rad as hell.
Yeah, I love that teapot with the super long spout.
Yeah, that was awesome. I wish we could have seen more from that dinner. I don't know if that was the only element of it that was like performative, but it seemed like it would have been a really cool experience for those chefs. So that was really dope. Mike, do you want to plug the guest judge from this episode and the name of his restaurant? Because we also didn't talk about that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I believe the guest judge is, and I might butcher his name here, but it's, let me see.
I think it's Joet Yu, but did you get the name of his restaurant?
Yeah, Holy Fock, right?
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I missed
something
that.
Something to that effect. Yeah. Three words there. So yeah, they showed it on the screen a couple times and I laughed every time they did it. So I'm clearly a soft mark for that sort of thing. No, I don't have anything else to plug. Like I said, help my nephew out. Really appreciate it.
Let's please help Antonio's nephew with his student assisted
responsiveness assignment. Yeah, they're just seeing how many people respond to this. 27286 SARA. That's all you got to do.
You can always follow me at @MikeBloomTop. I have no familial surveys to plug, but you can check out all the other podcasts. I'm doing RuPaul's Drag Race, just started up, so we kept those recaps going.
Excited.
We are starting up the Survivor B&B, have a pretty redonkulous episode with the great Ali Lasher that we just put out. I'm covering Star Trek Discovery on Post Show Recaps and The Hollywood Reporter as well. I have my interview with Justin up for Parade. Hopefully, by the time this is released, my Adrian interview should be up a couple days after that. And then I'll be talking with the fourth placer, and then I'll be doing a big roundtable with the final three the week of the finale, which should be a lot of fun. I always love really talking to the chefs, this group in particular. So be sure to check all that out. Please follow our judges panel co-host in absentia. Kurt is at Kurt Clark. Emily is at Emlet, Omelet with an EM. Josh is at Round Howard. You can check out all of his great Game of Thrones and Survivor coverage as well. As we round the corner, I think it debates to be seen as to which one of us will be back to talk about this season, but it's been so much fun to get together with certain conglomerates of us to talk through a very interesting season of Top Chef, to say the least. So that's going to do it for this week. Thank you all so much for listening. Let us know your thoughts as to your favorites going into this top four. Who do you think is going to make the finale? What you make of Graham's new use of colloquialisms. We want to hear all about it, and we appreciate all of you for listening and your support of the podcast all season long. Thank you so much for listening. You may pack your knives and go.